Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is my colleagues at BioNews and SMA News Today. First, we have Michael Morale. Michael, I know it's been a minute since we've had you on the podcast, but people can still keep in touch with you through your videos. So hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing great. Excited to be here. And then also with us is vlogger and forums moderator, Deanne Runge. Deanne, great to have you today as well.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, yeah, no, I it was funny. This summer, I met so many people from the SMA conference and had a bunch of great episodes, but it's been a minute since we've done just an internal roundtable with us. So excited to do this. And so today we're going to be talking both about some news updates regarding apitegromab, which is a treatment we've discussed multiple times before, but we're also doing our main topic on the subject of aging in SMA. And this was kind of spawned by a forum discussion post as well as a column I wrote. And so and Alyssa as well. And so this, I think, will be a really interesting discussion, just kind of sharing our perspectives. I'm sure we'll have some humor along the way. So yeah, excited for everyone to be here today. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. Whether you are living with SMA or are the parent to a child with SMA, make a choice today that could impact your future. Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so let's start with the news story today. I just picked one, but we can also touch on other updates. So as I said, you know, we've talked multiple times on the show and then on our website and in primarily Michael's videos on our YouTube channel about Scholar Rock's treatment, apitegromab, previously called SRK-015. And we're looking at an article today that was published in late October on our main site titled Apitegromab, Showing Potential to Ease Fatigue and Aid Life Quality. And so this gives some updates on the TOPAZ trial and, you know, and these are some really interesting information. So Michael, I know you summed this up in your recent video as well, but you want to give listeners just a brief overview of this story?
Absolutely. Most of you should know by now that Scholar Rock has apitegromab, and they've already done a phase one and phase two clinical trial. I was hoping that they would go after FDA approval after their phase two trial, because they did get some exciting data from it. But I don't know if the FDA asked them to do this extension study, this phase three pivotal trial or not, or if Scholar Rock decided to do it just to cover all the bases. I think they probably did it just to cover all of their bases, because it'll make it easier to get FDA approval, because this phase three pivotal trial is looking at long-term efficacy regarding apitegromab and how it's doing. The article itself talked about fatigue, that it was helping patients with fatigue. We do have a contractor that works for BioNews. I'm not going to say his name, but he is in that phase three pivotal trial. So he's been on apitegromab for the last probably 2.5 to 3 years. So I haven't spoken with him about it, and I needed to do that, but unfortunately I wasn't able to get in touch with him yesterday. But fatigue is something that I think all of us with SMA face, especially I think we saw it more when we started Spinraza. We felt good after our injections, but toward the end of that 4 month period, a lot of us, including myself, were starting to feel a little bit fatigued, like all of our energy had just gone out of us. And so I think as we've gone through Spinraza treatments, we see, you know, a lot better results. I'm not getting fatigued as much. But that was one of the things that was exciting about apitegromab, is it is easing some of that fatigue, which is good because, you know, after 4 months, that's a long time to wait. And I think with apitegromab, if the FDA approves it, which I think they will, they'll set it to where it'll probably be an infusion that we get every 4 weeks. So not only will we go in every 4 months for our Spinraza injection, but every 4 weeks we'll get an IV infusion of apitegromab. So I think that will definitely help, because again, Spinraza is going to work on the cellular level, and then apitegromab is going to work on the muscle level. So it's good that they're doing this phase 3 trial. It's good that they're seeing that fatigue is being lowered. One of the things that I'm excited about is we finally have a date as to when this phase 3 pivotal trial is scheduled to end. It's scheduled to conclude around April of 2024. Now, the FDA has already given priority review status to apitegromab or to Scholar Rock for their treatment, apitegromab. And so priority review status just means that when they finish this study in April of 2024 or around there, and when they file for the paperwork to get approval for it, given that they've got this, you know, a lot of people call it fast track status. Fast track status and priority review status is about the same thing. The FDA will only take about anywhere from 3 to 6 months to get the approval for it or the denial, whichever they choose. So I'm hoping, let's say that they take 4 months. I'm thinking that Scholar Rock will probably apply for FDA approval in May of 2024. So around September to October of 2024, we should hear some, what I'm hoping to be exciting news, that it was approved. So the article was really, really well written. And so I think it's going to be a game changer for us. Now, that's me looking at the glass half full instead of half empty. But we've never had anything that dealt with the muscular level. Cytokinetics was looking at doing a muscle-targeted therapy back whenever Kevin and I were at the convention. I think that was in 2018, I believe.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Here in Dallas. And I made a comment during the closing day when they had all the researchers up on stage. I said the cytokinetics doctor and the Biogen doctor should go into a room and find a way to get these two treatments to work together. Well, unfortunately, cytokinetics wasn't able to get that worked out. But now, again, with Scholar Rock doing it, I think the glimmer of hope is a lot better. So anyway.
Right. And that's something we've talked about before as well. The amount of studies looking at joining Spinraza with Scholar Rock's treatment and Evrysdi as well, because, again, those are ones that work at the cellular level. And combination therapies are definite discussions happening and have been in clinical trials. So it'll be,
I think combination therapies are going to be the way of the future. Uh-huh. I think we've already got Spinraza. We've already got something that's been approved. We've got Zolgensma. Now, Zolgensma will not be used in correlation with apitegromab, but we've already got a treatment out there. And I think a lot of these pharmaceutical companies are scratching their head going, why are we trying to recreate the wheel? Yeah. You know, they don't want another therapy out there that's only going to do what Spinraza is doing. Why invest the money and the time? Because, you know, usually these pharmaceutical companies spend upwards to $1 billion getting a treatment approved. So a pharmaceutical company is not going to do that. Now, I say that because it's my own opinion. I might be surprised. Maybe somebody will. But I think research is going to lean more toward the combination therapies, especially toward the muscle-targeted therapies. Mm. So, you know, I'm excited about that. And then also Biogen's looking at increasing the dosing amounts of Spinraza. That clinical trial, I'm not sure when that one's supposed to end, but it will probably be before Scholar Rock finishes their phase 3 pivotal trial. So who knows? We may be getting more Spinraza in the future. And I mean, they're almost talking of doubling the dose, even tripling the dose of Spinraza.
I'm curious about that one too.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because, you know, if you think about it, me as an adult, you know, 57-year-old guy that weighs 150 pounds, 160 pounds, is getting the same dosing amount of Spinraza that a 2-week-old is going to get. And it just, for me, that's always been a point where I've scratched my head going, why? But they had to do that because that's the dosing amount that they did in the clinical trials. So they can't just say, okay, the clinical trials are over, we're going to increase it. They had to test it, and that's what they're doing now. So, you know, who knows? We may be getting a 4-week infusion of apitegromab, and we may be getting a 4-month injection of Spinraza that's going to double or triple the dosing amounts. So I see a really good path for those of us with SMA.
Well, for sure. I know Michael is more on the positive aspect of apitegromab. I'm more on the fence about it for a couple of reasons. Uh-huh. One is the infusion. I switched from Spinraza to Evrysdi because mainly because of transportation issues. So I can't see going every, how long? 4 weeks?
4 weeks, yeah.
An infusion, that would be very difficult for me.
Yeah, now I can probably answer that question, Deanne. The infusion, I don't know if it'll be done at the same location that you do your Spinraza injection. Like I go to UT Southwestern Medical Center. Yeah. It's a teaching college here in Dallas. It's a world-renowned place, but I don't know if I'm going to be going there to get the apitegromab infusions or if I'm going to go to an infusion center. Now, there may be an infusion center much closer to your house that they can do the infusion of the apitegromab for you without you having to go to the clinic or the hospital that you go to get your Spinraza. So
yeah, I think that'll make it a little bit easier. However, I do live in a very rural area, so yeah. I don't think they have access to the
latest and greatest
medications. So yeah. That would be something to check into.
Yeah, and that's something that I need to speak to my neurologist about to find out if they're going to do it. I mean, for me, if I have to go to UT Southwestern every 4 weeks, that's fine, but I just had a subcutaneous port put in.
Yeah.
And I did it for the main reason was because of, I think apitegromab will be approved, and finding a vein in our arms for somebody with SMA is the proverbial needle in a haystack. So yeah. I had a port put in about 6 weeks ago. And so I'm going to be using that. If I have to go to the hospital, they can use the port to give me, you know, IVs or antibiotics, you know, fluids, and they can also use it for blood draws. So that's, you know, I think the subcutaneous port would be something that our listeners might want to talk to their doctors about it to see, you know, if they're having trouble getting an IV in you. Spinraza is different because they go through your back, your neck, or your side. But getting an IV in people with SMA is tough. So if any
that's
of our
listeners...
That's
another hesitation for me because yeah, I don't have a port. But.
Right. But I mean, the port surgery that I went through was super simple. It was like 45 minutes. I was out of the hospital within 3 or 4 hours after surgery. I've been in absolutely no pain at all. It's healing nice. The thing about a port, though, you have to have it flushed every 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So, but if when apitegromab gets approved, which again, I think it will, we're going to be going through these infusions every 4 weeks anyway. So they'll have to flush the port before they use it to begin with.
So, well, and I wanted to get back. I just wanted to get back to you, ask any other thoughts from your perspective on apitegromab and also anything you want to say about your treatment currently.
Well, I know as far as I'm grateful for the treatments and I'm happy to be on what I'm on at the moment. But I know like when it first came out, you know, I was super excited and was very hopeful for a lot more than what I got with the treatments. I'm happy for staying stable. However, there's always that little hope in the back of your mind that it'll do more. And so with the new drug coming out, is it going to be a similar where you hope for more and it's not as effective? Or is it going to be something that's like, oh, wow, that's great? So
no,
anyway,
absolutely.
That's kind of my thoughts, and I don't know if it's making any sense or not.
No, not at all. No, and I'm glad you brought it up, because those are all valid concerns, questions. And I mean, I think back to when I started treatment, you know, like I had so many anxieties. I mean, because while it was exciting, I didn't know what kind of side effects there would be, what it would do for me, like you said. And again, you also bring up a really good point. I also talked with my doctor about the infusions, like, you know, if this drug comes out, would it be able to do at home? From what I know, they are looking at that. There's no confirmation, but like you said too, if you live in an area where it's not as easily accessible and you're kind of like isolated from other medical facilities, that presents an obstacle as well. And so these are all things that I'm glad you brought them up, because these are all valid concerns for people in the community and things that need to be brought up. So Michael, did you want to? Oh, no, go ahead, Ian. Sorry.
One other thing and then I'll be done.
No rush.
I think it's a difference too between age groups. I know for some of us old timers, we don't see as much benefit mm-hmm. as the youngsters. And it's kind of amazing to see what it does for, you know, the youngsters, the treatments that are out now. So combination therapy is, you know, it'll be fun to watch and see what comes with that.
Absolutely. And yeah, Michael.
Yeah, I think Deanne touched on a sensitive topic that I think a lot of us were thinking about, is that, yeah, there was a lot of excitement when Spinraza came out. We were hoping that, yeah, we're going to regain some of our functions that we've lost due to aging and due to the muscle wasting that's synonymous with SMA. But I think we've all also come to realize, and something that I've talked about in some of my videos, was that I think that was a hope that we all had, and a lot of people were disappointed that they didn't get any stronger. But we need to remember, Spinraza doesn't do anything for muscles. Yeah. It's intended to either slow or stop the progression. For some people, it's stopped the progression. For me, I'm still getting weaker in my hands and my fingers. But I'm not getting as bad as fast as I used to. So I know that Spinraza is doing something. You know, I think that's something that we need to look at, was that it wasn't designed to make us stronger. And we were hoping that it would, I guess, in the deepest part of our mind. But reality says no. So I think that's why the muscle-targeted therapy, you know, apitegromab will probably address that. And Deanne said something about that it's good for the children. That to me is more exciting, because they haven't gone through the muscle wasting that we have.
Yeah. Right.
So they haven't encountered some of the detriments of this disease, such as the muscle wasting, the breathing issues. So to me, Spinraza was just a godsend for a lot of children that would have never had a future. Now they do. So I think apitegromab, when it gets approved, I think it's going to be an answer to a lot of prayers. And regarding the infusion, I'm looking at having a nurse come to my house every 4 to 6 weeks to do this flush of my catheter on my port. And they may be able to come to your house to do this infusion. So something that you want to talk to your insurance companies about. Most insurance companies cover the surgery if you want to have a port implanted in you. They do it right above, I think the majority of them do it right above the right chest, like in the chest area. For me, it's about maybe 4 to 5 inches above my right nipple. So that's where the port's put in. So we won't have to lay down for these infusions. We'll be able to sit up in our chairs. Shouldn't take probably more than an hour. So again, there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. And yeah, there are still a lot of questions that need to be asked. And I think for those of us that are looking into this, we have plenty of time to talk to our doctors, whether you go through your neurologist or your primary care physician. So make sure you talk to them and find out if a port is good for you. Find out if they know anything about apitegromab and this article that we're talking about today. And if not, print the article out and show it to your doctors. Send it to them. They may not know anything about it.
I know my neurologist, I just had my annual visit and he did mention it. So they are aware of it.
Yeah, I think most neurologists and most primary care physicians that have patients with SMA will be aware of it. But, you know, again, getting back to the article, we talk about the fatigue. That's something that I'm excited about, because if I can keep my energy throughout the day, which I normally can, but as that 4-month period gets closer to where I'm due to go in for my next injection, I still feel a little bit of fatigue, but not near as much as I used to.
Well, Michael, Deanne, thank you so much for sharing your perspectives on this. And, you know, it's, of course, something we will be continually updating as more information comes out. And so you can follow us on our site and here and on our multimedia content. But thank you so much. And before we get to our main topic, if everyone could please listen to one more word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. If you're living with SMA, the subtle changes that happen from one day to the next can be hard to notice until a key function is lost. Many people find that these changes can impact their life, not just physically, but also emotionally. Since the progression of SMA is relentless, taking action now is important. If you've waited to go on treatment or were told there were no treatments for you, now might be the time to talk to your doctor. Breakthroughs in science have led to more options than ever before in treatment and care. Choosing a disease-modifying treatment can make a difference. Why wait? Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so the discussion we just had is actually a really good segue into discussing aging in SMA. And so again, this was a topic brought up in our forums by Alyssa, and then I wrote a column about it. And I'm going to link the discussion and that column in the description here, but I really encourage people to go back and look at some of the responses here, because it was a really fascinating discussion, both from people who are older in the SMA community, some who are kind of on the younger side. And there were a lot of points made about, I guess, basically Alyssa just talked about how she recently had a birthday and, you know, living with SMA has affected the way she thinks about aging, between outliving life expectancies and then just the other things that come into play when you live with a neuromuscular disability. And so she just asked people what they thought about aging and how do they feel about it. And the responses were really fascinating. There was one who I believe is on the older side and talked about how really the core reason why we have a lot of anxiety about this is just because of systemic ableism and how it's hard to plan for the future when you're constantly worried about managing caregivers and just living independently, because, you know, only a couple generations ago, disabled people were put in institutions, just, you know, just being real there. And we still have a ways to go for us to be treated as, you know, fully capable members of society. And so I think caregivers is a big anxiety for a lot of us. And then I wrote a column about it as well, just kind of talking about how, because I also had a birthday in October, like Alyssa, and I was saying that, you know, I try to think about aging from just a real human perspective in that, you know, I'm excited for the future. I think SMA has impacted the way I think about aging because, you know, having, of course, lost friends in the community at young ages, and then, you know, I'm still here. And but at the same time, I joked that sometimes the only difference between me and a senior citizen is that I know the lyrics to Taylor Swift's recent album. But other than that, you know, I mean, because I joked in there that, yeah, I have more medical specialists than I can count. And, you know, I deal with fatigue and disability progression and all these things. So I just thought this was a really fascinating discussion. And I wanted to just kind of open it up and see what kind of like we thought about aging. And if we have anything to add to this conversation. So Deanne, let me start with you. Just want to ask, was aging something that you thought about when you were growing up?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I would, if I could go back and do a lot of things differently, I would. I never thought I'd live beyond 40. I know when I turned 30, I threw a big birthday party just because mm-hmm. I didn't know if I'd get to 40. And then 40 came and now I'm, you know, into my 40s. So it's definitely not something I thought about. And I think the caregiver aspect is something that's really important. And I am fortunate that I do have caregivers independent from, let's say, just strictly my parents. I know a lot of people rely on their parents, and now my parents, well, my dad has passed away and my mom is 70, and she does still fill in for me, but I know it's getting harder for her. So I have to look at finding more caregivers to even take that pressure off of her.
Definitely. I think we can all relate to that. And this is also ties back to an episode we did about caregiving and our different perspectives there. But yeah. And then yeah. Michael, what about you? Was aging ever something that you thought about when you were growing up?
You know, it was. Hang on just a second. Okay, sorry.
No worries.
Yeah, it was definitely a topic that I thought about. You know, whenever I was being raised in the late 60s, early 70s, when we found out that I was going to be disabled when I was not properly diagnosed, but at least they knew it wasn't muscular dystrophy. They knew it was a neuromuscular disease. My parents were very proactive. You know, they knew that it was going to take a lot of money to live with this disease or whatever disease I had. I didn't know that I had SMA until I was 33 or 34 years old. That was when I was properly diagnosed. But they made a point to where, you know, save as much as you can, you know, because ultimately I was going to have somebody to help take care of me. Put me to bed, get me dressed, help me bathroom, showers, feeding, stuff like that. Now, I just lost the ability to feed myself probably about 7 years ago, 6 years ago. I lost some strength in my arm. So, you know, it is a topic that I thought about, and it caused, you know, a lot of depression. I think a lot of us that go through this go through some depression that we may need some help with, you know, to talk about these things. And, you know, I'm seeing a therapist now over some issues that I've got about, hey, you know, what exactly is going to happen to me in the future? You know, how can I mitigate some of this, this anxiety that I'm going through? And it's really helped to talk to a therapist. And I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm talking to a therapist. I mean, I would rather talk to a therapist and maybe get some answers than not, and try to deal with it on my own and not know exactly what I'm doing. So aging, I mean, it sucks. Okay. All of us are going to get older. There's nothing you can do about it, but you also got to think of it this way. 30 years ago, we would probably be dead by now. You know, we would probably be dead. So a lot of things have changed. Lifestyles have changed. We eat better because we have to, not because we want to, you know, and that helps. So I'm trying to do everything I can to stay as healthy as I can until this muscle targeted therapy comes out. And then we'll see where it goes from there. You know, I'm very fortunate to have caregivers that live with me, and they're here 24/7, 365. And I'm very fortunate that I don't have to constantly worry about caregivers. But, you know, not to say that my caregivers someday may go, hey, listen, we want to do something else. Okay, then I'm going to have to face with getting another caregiver. And that's going to cause stress and anxiety. But, you know, with the therapy that I've had, I should be able to deal with that. I should be fine. But, you know, I do worry about what's going to happen to me in the future. Am I going to end up in a nursing home? I mean, if I can't find a caregiver, or if I can't afford a caregiver, you know, if I lose my job, whatever the case may be, and the money dries up, then I'm going to have to go into either a Medicare funded nursing home or some assisted living center. And I've even looked at going into a group home, but that was very depressing to see, because most group homes are for mental issues such as Alzheimer's. And so it's not a great choice. It's a choice that we have, but it's a choice that I really don't want. So yeah, there have been some issues with regards to aging that I think all of us are going to go through. I mean, I'll be 58 years old in August. So, you know, I should be dead by now. And I'm very thankful that I'm not. I'm thankful that I've got what I have. You know, sure, I would love to be able to reach up and grab a glass and drink from a glass instead of having to have a straw. I'd love to be able to feed myself. Maybe apitegromab will give us the ability to regain some of that muscle loss that we have. I think, again, it'll be more for children than it will be for us, because, you know, even apitegromab will not reverse the damage. But if we can target muscle, maybe we can get a little bit stronger. So, I mean, it's kind of contradicting what I just said, but it's that hope in the back of my mind that kind of keeps me going.
Well, sure, and I like on the forum post, one of the individuals said, and don't forget to wear your sunscreen, because I didn't always think about things that, I need to wear sunscreen to prevent preventative measures. So, you know, eating junk food maybe wasn't the best idea, or, you know, we maybe should watch our cholesterol and wear sunscreen to prevent skin cancer. And, you know, those weren't always on the top of my mind, but maybe they should have been.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think growing up, we didn't have sunscreen. I mean, we used to rub, what is it, baby oil on us so we could get darker, so we could get a tan. And unfortunately, I've got my mother's Anglo-Saxon skin, so I burn rather easily. And now that I have no hair, that makes it even worse. So, and I don't get out a lot. I don't get out near as much as I used to. You know, as a kid, I'd leave the house at 8:30 in the morning and I wouldn't come back until dinner time. So we were always out in the sun. And I've had a few spots taken off my nose and my back where it was cancerous. But, you know, I think everybody's going to go through that as they age. I don't think it's a diet issue or anything else. But, yeah, it's a lot of things that we have to think about now that we didn't have to think about whenever we were younger. Yeah. And, you know, let's face it, junk food tastes so good. Oh, it's great. I love it. You know, but I've always found that anything that tastes great is going to be bad for you. You know, that's just the way. Bacon, I could eat bacon all day long. You know, oh no, you can't do that because it's bad for you. And anything that tastes good or anything that tastes bad is good for you. You know, so we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
I know bone health is another thing that I didn't think about as a kid. And now I know I've had one broken bone in my life, but trying to prevent that and, you know, think about your bone health too, especially since we're not weight bearing, a lot of us, that can cause bone issues as well. So,
yes, it can. Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that whenever I was growing up, we didn't really know that much about neuromuscular diseases. And my father was a master sergeant in the National Guard, and he was built. I mean, this guy was stacked. My father had huge arms. He could pick me up with one hand. We did exercises. We did push-ups and sit-ups all the time, you know, every night before bed. Now that I think about it, we shouldn't have done that because I would have probably been stronger today if I hadn't done all those exercises, because people with neuromuscular diseases need to be careful how we stress these muscles, because when you stress a muscle, it tries to get bigger. And of course, we can't do that. So, you know, there's a lot of things now. I wish I would have known then what I know now.
Right.
Because I wouldn't have done what I did when I was younger. But, you know, like I said, it is what it is. It was what we had to deal with and what we, the information that we had when we were younger.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a big revelation for a lot of us, like not just in an age of treatments, but just in general information about SMA and how to manage it. The quality of care, like I don't know how to phrase this, like the access we have and the resources are way better than what really any of us had growing up. And so I think that with that, it comes revelation and also like, oh, maybe I should have done this or not done that when I was younger. And obviously you can't fix those, but it does, I think, give us hope for going forward in terms of like, okay, there are ways to manage progression to an extent and, you know, exercise effectively. So all these things come into play. But Deanne, I wanted to go back for a sec about, so talking about how you were saying, you know, you didn't really think about aging growing up and you weren't really expecting to live long. And now, you know, things have shifted both in terms of medical care and you are living longer and independently. So can you talk about when you started living independently, pursuing caregivers, how that mentality may have shifted some, or what was going through your mind when you realized that, oh, you might actually be able to live longer, and now how do I manage all of this as an adult with a disability?
For me, I think it was the college experience. I, up until then, my parents were my primary caregivers, except for the occasional time when my mom, her back, you know, was out or whatever. But in college, I saw other people living independently. And I thought, oh, you know, this is something that I can attain. And when I finished college, I had the option to either move back in with my parents, and I actually did for a little bit. But then I knew that I wanted to do it more on my own. And that's not the perfect solution for everybody. But I found resources that were there to help, and I took advantage of all those. And I do wish I would have been more financially responsible. I know when you don't expect to live into retirement, you don't exactly save like Michael and have a little nest.
Don't worry.
So I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't have bought what I wanted when I wanted it, you know, things like that. But I am glad that I can make it on my own, because I know, like I said, my mom is getting older, and I am going to have to rely solely on other people for caregiving. But
hey, don't worry. The financial aspect is something I struggle with like very much because one of the topics brought up in that forum discussion was about ABLE accounts, which I did get one sometime last year, and it's very nice, really helpful. But even then, I'm still notorious for buying what I want when I want and going out a lot and wanting to live in the moment, which I think is to an extent, but also, yeah.
It's a hard balance because you want to live in the moment and you want to enjoy your time now because the future isn't guaranteed, especially when you have SMA. Mm-hmm. However, you kind of have to think about it now.
Yeah. And for those of you that are listening to this podcast, if Kevin had all the money that he spent on action figures and Marvel comics, Kevin, you'd be a rich man by now.
Oh, I mean, I have four bookshelves behind me. So yeah, I'm That's right. It's for all kinds of media, but yeah, but no, Deanna, it's such a great point because it is finding that balance. And I think that applies to really anyone, but especially yeah. when you do have a disability, like, yes, we are living longer and yes, we have way more resources and, you know, disability and SMA is no longer a definitive death sentence, but nonetheless, we're still not guaranteed as long a life as others or we know things can change. So it is yeah. really tough finding that balance for me. I think between I love living in the moment. I love experiencing things, going on trips and doing all these things. But at the same time, I know I need to be still responsible enough to plan for a future in some capacity. And it's tough because, you know, when you're depending on government programs, like even as someone, this is another point that was brought up, that where I was in the same situation as one of our members who does work full time, but is still on Medicaid to receive caregiving services. So yep. you're still limited financially. Like for me, it's the same boat as him where I don't receive the monthly SSI checks, but I still have to stay at a limited income because if I make too much, then I lose those services. And I'm not in a position where I can afford caregivers on my own. So I have right. to kind of compromise. And it's really hard when it's when you're in that boat because, and these are, again, I mean, we could do a whole another discussion on this, on the right. systemic issues. And I don't want to get, you know, like too involved in that. But that's the thing where it makes it really hard is like, if you make, you know, a decent income, but you're still required to adhere to these rules in order to retain caregivers, it then becomes really hard because, yeah, we like him, I can't do a 401k or anything like that. My only option for really saving is putting money into an ABLE account.
There's drawbacks to that as well, because you can save in an ABLE account, but if something happens to you, it doesn't go to a family member, it goes to Medicaid or whatever. So, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really makes me angry is that, you know, of course, people that are on SSDI or SSI or if they're on Medicaid, yeah, we can only make so much money per month and still be able to keep our benefits. And I know why they do that, because there's a lot of people out there that would claim a disability that would then go out and get a full-time job. But instead of going after those individuals and punishing the guilty party, they punish those of us that have good intentions. We want to work. I don't want to sit and watch Netflix all day long. You know, as much as I would love to do it for a little while, after a while, it would get really old. But I would love to be able to make more money and still keep my disability. It's not like I'm going out and chopping down trees, on my off time, you know, but working from home, I don't have to drive. I don't have to get out in the elements, you know, wintertime. I think most of us with SMA despise winter because we don't get out. We start hibernating like bears just to stay warm. And a lot of that is because a lot of us with SMA can't regulate our body temperatures. So I wish that they would relook at this issue about money and being able to make money, because we need to save for our future. And we can't do that like we should be able to do it because of these stipulations that the government has in place. So I'm hoping that someday they'll say, hey, Michael, hey, Kevin, hey, Deanne, you guys can go out and make as much money as you want and still keep your benefits, because it would open the door for us to start planning better for our future instead of worrying about our future.
I 100% agree. And and that's why I think this discussion is so important, because all of these things are valid perspectives. And, like when we think about aging and SMA or another disability, there's both personal circumstances and thoughts that come to mind, and then there are also big systemic issues that we all have to deal with and that affect the way we think about planning for the future, financial resources, all these things. And so that's why I really appreciate you both sharing your perspective on this, and it's something that, you know, we need to talk about more so that society understands that there are difficulties when it comes to, it's not just about being physically healthy. It's about, you know, being able to remain independent and still get the medical care and resources that we need.
And one last thought from me anyway. Yeah. I know Michael said aging sucks, but it's kind of awesome too that, you know, I have a gray hair and I actually have a gray hair, you know, I never thought I would. So it is, you know, pretty awesome that we live in the time that we do with the medical advancements and treatments, and so that where we can live beyond our expectations.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I agree that it is exciting that we are getting older. We have the ability to get older. I think that's great. Regarding the gray hair, I started getting gray hairs long before I was this age. And matter of fact, whenever I do shave my head, it's probably 95% gray, when I used to have, you know, dark brown hair, and I had a whole bunch of it too.
Well, now I have to practice with the Jayco putting cheaters on because my arms aren't long enough anymore. So,
yep. Well, your arms are long enough. You just can't get your arms to where they need to go. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, Deanne, that was like almost the exact comment that kind of spawned this discussion in the first place. Because I was brainstorming topics with other moderators and columnists here at BioNews. And there was someone who said that too, that like, you know, I'm actually like really glad to have another birthday, even when it's quote unquote past like the cool ones, like getting another year older in your 30s or 40s or whatever is really exciting for us, because for many of us, we weren't told we would make it to that long at all. So
I'm curious, did you guys have a expect, like, did your doctors say anything? Like, my mom was told that at 3 years old.
Mine was about, so I was diagnosed in 95. So it changed a little bit, but I was given 18 years maximum.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my story is a little bit different, because when I was, I guess I was about a year old, I wasn't meeting the milestones that children that age would meet or should meet. So my parents took me to a neurologist, I think it was a neurologist, and he examined me for maybe 5 minutes and looked at my parents, said, take him home, enjoy what life he's got left, but you might as well start planning his funeral. Uh-huh. And he did it so nonchalantly that, you know, my parents were shocked. So, you know, I wasn't given very long to live because they didn't know what I had. They knew it was neuromuscular. They knew it wasn't muscular dystrophy, but it was still neuromuscular. And with any neuromuscular diseases, of course, the life expectancy is going to be shorter. But, you know, when I was properly diagnosed with SMA type 3, either in 96 or 98, I think it was in 98, it told me that, well, I am going to live a little bit longer, because typically SMA type 3 patients will live a normal expected life, you know, as far as years. We're just going to get progressively weaker as we get older. So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's great that I'm going to live to be 80 years old, maybe, but it's bad because I'm going to get weaker. But again, with all these therapies that are coming out now, and this whole Scholar Rock issue, this is going to open the floodgates. I mean, it's going to open Pandora's box for future therapies. So, you know, I'm excited about getting older because I now know that I have the ability to get older.
Well, and like one of the forum members said, you can just throw life expectancy out the window because everybody's different, and, you know, just, live your lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think a lot of us have the impression that quantity of life is great, but when my quality of life ends and it becomes quantity, that's when I'm going to think, I really don't want to be around, you know? I mean, I'm not suicidal, don't get me wrong, but whenever my quality of life becomes quantity of life, I think that's when a lot of people are going to go through a difficult time.
That's a great point. Yeah. And it is crazy that we're all three of us are from different generations, and we were all given that very limited life expectancy, but, and to an extent that's played into how we think about aging, but in other ways, it's just like the evolution of SMA and resources, the community. And yeah, Deanna, I love that. I think that's a great quote to end on, is just live your lives. And yeah.
So yep. I think awesome. doctors were trained years and years ago, whenever I was young, to give the worst news possible, you know, give the worst news and hope for the best. I think we're seeing a little bit of a shift in that philosophy. Doctors are a little bit more optimistic. Doctors have better bedside manners. They're not as pessimistic as they used to be, which is exciting for all of us.
Yeah, I hope to see more of that.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, Deanna, this has been a fantastic discussion as always, and really appreciate your time. And I will link all of the articles and posts we discussed in the description here. You know where people can find you, of course. And again, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, great. Kevin.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on our main site at smanewstoday.com for the latest news and perspectives, and connect with us directly on our forums. I'm Kevin Schaefer, and I will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.